Stuff, Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. We ended last time with the story of Hillel, the part of the story that first tried to anger him, the extreme extent that Hillel went to not get angry. And we also noted at the end, we brought up the discussion of how extreme he went, and the wording that he used that made it sound like, I deserve that you should lose those 800 shekel. Meaning, like he was saying, here is almost an egocentric perspective here. This is not about you, whether I was going to yell at you. This is about me, whether I'm going to come out of this okay or not. And yes, Hashem helped, that even though it costed you 800 shekel, I came out okay. So it's really, sometimes the most obvious things have to be brought out. I want to bring this out. But we're talking here very much about the sugya of perfection of midas. Perfection of midas is, Rabbi Gamliel was medayik from the previous Olamos, that for the sum all of our midas Hashem into, if you want to quantify midas Hashem as much as you can, right? So many areas, it's about growth. So many areas of growth, about growing. It's a very, very broad and vague term. So he said you can make three primary agendas that everything in life is about. When you're trying to map your growth and plan your growth, you should figure out exactly where am I in these three realms and take it from there. The three realms are perfection of mind, perfection of character, and the fear of the tariq, choosing good. The first two are easier to understand without elaboration. The third one needs more elaboration. But that's not really my point right now. My point is not all three right now. My point is that number two, perfection of character, is really one of the agendas that we're here for in this work. In fact, the Gra takes it even further and says, the person is not being shader as his person isn't working on his mind. It's one of the chayim. What's he here for? It is one of our foremost agendas and functions that we're here for. As the truth is, we know what a stress Yiddishkeit puts on family life, right? Sometimes we almost seem as though, you know what, I think I can make more progress spiritually if I were on my own, right? I have the peace of mind to really just invest in my learning, etc., etc. But no, you're very wrong, because on the contrary, our wives are there to polish our character. Our children are there to polish our character, to bring out more hatava and chesed. And Hashem has a very specific regimen for each person, and He gives each person a family situation according to his. What Hashem expects from him, according to his topic, right? But our objective approach is, we know it's a very central value in Yiddishkeit to try to have a family, try to have a wife, try to have children, try to have as many of them as possible, part of the value. And we know the joys of having a family. We also know that sometimes you can feel overwhelming, you can feel like a challenge, right? And often the thought will cross our mind of, couldn't I make any further if I wasn't encumbered by these responsibilities? But the answer is on the contrary. This is your ultimate program for growth. You're doing this now, trying to hammer this point home here. But so let's put this into that perspective. It's understanding that perfection of character is one of the four most purposes that we're here for. So many of the mitzvahs are centered around that. So many of the mitzvahs are centered around that. Like maybe the mitzvahs are the Sarah Fem Sabriyas. It goes in both directions. You have to have good nidus in order to be Mekayim many of the expectations of the Torah. But on the other hand, it's both the cause and the effect. Many of the expectations of the Torah are there for the perfect God, producing the best, most refined character possible. Now, specifically in this area, so on the contrary, you've got this that Hillel is almost alluding to the fact that this is not about a very nice person. It's not a story about a very nice person. A very patient person. Hillel is almost alluding at the fact that this is a project, this is a personal project. He's working on it. And he's working on himself in order to achieve this. And
On the contrary, that puts Hillel into an even greater light for us. This is not a man of natural, necessarily, of natural, refined, perfect character. This is a man who made a life's project out of working on his patience, working on his humility. Moshe Feinstein, right? Moshe Feinstein is the legendary Anov. And he said that he worked on it for 26 years. So he worked on the Anov for 26 years. You know exactly what he meant to put it. At that point in 26 years, and he meant that he's going to be continuing, or did he mean that, no, that was the project he made out of it for 26 years. Whatever it is, the greatness, primary greatness, is the work that we put into developing these very, very fine characters. This is not exactly this either, it's just another context. Of Chaim Driskowitz was very, very famous for his generosity. Of Chaim Driskowitz, money, food, not just money, but generosity just kind of flowed through his hands. His home was known to be like Grand Central Station. People came in and his home was almost Mamashev. As the famous Shishin Pinker said, this is one of his favorite stories. Chaim Driskowitz was, people came and went very freely. His home was also a convalescent home. Really, at the virtue from there. Shalom Aleichem. I'm Binyamin Jacobs. Okay. Some people call me Rabbi.
All right.
Mm-hmm. What's your name?
Shalom.
Shalom.
Okay, yes.
Shalom.
Thank you.
Chaim Driskowitz was people used to come and go in his house very freely. Women used to come there after childbirth to rest up. There was always being food being brought out. You came in, you found yourself a place to sleep. Okay? And there was one time a person came, a wayfarer from out of town. He had to be there for a few weeks. He was in this salvation home. And he started getting uncomfortable. How long are you allowed to be here? So he turned to somebody else in the house and he said, how long are you allowed to be here? So this person said, look, I've been here already for a number of years. Nobody ever told me anything. But only later he discovered that he actually is from Chaim himself, Balabais. That from Shimshon Pinker said it's one of his favorite stories. Well, another incident about the Chaim was that, this is really leading up to our point. Chaim, one time there was a big shidduch between two of the big famous gvirim of Europe. The big famous wealthy people of Europe, they made a shidduch together. And as befitting a shidduch of such a stature, they made it, had to be top in every area. Top fans, the top this, and the top this, top everything. They bought from all around Europe. They put together their way. Right? Today's stogging. That would be, the top singer from here, and the top saxophone guy from there, and the top caterer for Cholin from here, and there. Okay? So, and they wanted to have the top Misadi Kiddushin also. They wanted a kind of risk of Misadi Kiddushin. So, they put him up in an inn. He was Masada Kiddushin. And the next morning, both of the Zatanim came in to give him the Asher Koyach, and he was going to leave. And they came in, and they wanted to show a token of their appreciation. These people, their tokens were expensive. They handed him a very, very, very thick envelope. A very thick envelope. A low, sealed, thick envelope. They put that on the table, and he took it, thanked them graciously, and he pushing the apostle film, giving him all kinds of brachas. Meanwhile, other people were coming and going to it, Eitzel, Bracha, Shai, or whatever it is. As these two people were sitting there, a person came in and started telling Reb Chaim his woes, which included also financial woes. Right in front of the two of them, Reb Chaim hadn't even opened the envelope. He took the envelope and handed it to the person. That was that. This was just classic. You hear the stories of Reb Chaim Brisker's generosity. It was almost like money just was nothing to him. Someone once said something to him about his generous nature. Remember about his generous nature? Chaim looked at him and he said, generous nature? For the first time I gave away money that I wanted Mokhoyev to give away. I mean, we all give Meister, right? We all give what we're Mokhoyev to give. It's almost like we don't feel that. So the first time I actually parted with money that I didn't have to, I felt like I was cutting off a limb. So he said, I felt like I was cutting off a limb. The second time, it was a little less painful. In other words, the point is again, when we hear the stories of these great people, right? He all epitomizes these stories. We're talking about people who worked on themselves, and that's really what we want to get out of it. How much of a central place we should give to working on ourselves in terms of our character. And again, it's primarily relevant in our homes, right? We have people around us in our homes who are there for that. It's one of their functions. We have to thank them for that. They're there to polish our character. Now just bring the point home just by reading from the Rambam. But the Rambam says in general, when it comes to Midas, you have to take the middle path. I always stress this when we refer to this Rambam. One of the most, probably one of the greatest distortions of our time is to quote this Rambam in the context of Yiddishkeit in general. That the approach to Yiddishkeit should be the middle path. That's it. This quote is sacrilege and okay, you have many other adjectives. But Rambam is talking about Midas. He says that Midas, you have to take the middle path. All the Midas to be perfectly balanced. The only Midas. But then he goes ahead and he says, there are some, I'm just translating without reading the Hebrew. This is the translation. There are Midas that a person may not take the middle path with him. Rather, he should go all the way to the extreme. And what is this? Goy v'halev. Egoism. Here, it's not... The right way is not just for a person to be humble. Rather, he should be extremely unassuming, and he should be extremely low-spirited, I guess we'd say. That's why about Moshe Rabbeinu, it says he was very humble. It doesn't just say that he was in honor. Okay? And that's why the one ego, the Chazal say by the great others, is when it comes to ego, be very, very humble. And then he continues and he says, which is really the same thing, what's the one of the biggest manifestations of ego of Gaiva is Kas. So he says, Kas is a very bad leader. And a person should try to distance himself from Kas all the way to the extreme. And a person should train himself not to get angry even when it comes to something that one should get angry about. Talk about the story of Hillel, right? That's what he's talking about. Obviously referring to this. Okay, then he continues and says, there are situations where it's your duty to express anger. There are situations where it's your duty to express anger. So, if you need to impose fear on your family, or if you're a leader, if you're a leader, and you have to, it's your duty to show anger, so you have to show it outwardly, while making sure that inside, you're calm, composed, and not losing it. Okay, this is just the important perspective to come away from this story. We'll add to that. Rabbi Lapian, famously, when he had to punish a child, he never did it when he was angry. If he was angry, he would not punish him angry. That's why, in his family, they knew. The worse the infraction, the later the punishment would come. That was how it worked. Because he had to know that he was completely calm, already over it. Once he's at the stage that it's already natural, he'd rather just... Now he can come back to it. Now, that was when he would come to punish him. When he overcome. When the punishment would come naturally from him, then he wouldn't. But already at the point that, okay, shine, like water under the bridge. No, then he would come back and do it. Okay. We move on. Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. The two dots. A third of the way down the wide lines, you have the two dots. A third of the way down the wide lines, you have the two dots. Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. Tamar Rabban. Here, stand.
The whole world is benefiting from a better hero.
Oh, so apparently he's saying that Papa is both. Meaning Hashem is saying this person stands to lose this, that person stands to lose that. Better that person should lose his 800 zoos, and Hillel shouldn't lose that moment of anger, right? That moment of anger. You can either say that it's a greater loss, You could say one of two ways. Or you could say that apparently it's just a sign of how much Hashem cherishes Zura. With Avodah. Okay. That's right. Ultimately, it provides for all of us as the lesson. That's right. Okay, so we have Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph, a third down the wide line by the two dots. Tadar Abba. We continue along Hillel's legendary legacy. Tadar Abba. He was a non-Jew who came before Shammai. Omaloi, he said, how many Torahs do you have? Omaloi, he told him, Shtayim, two. This really means there's two dimensions to our Torah, right? We all understand that. Torah Shebiktav, there's the written Torah. The Torah Shebaltav, and the oral Torah. So he told him, Shebiktav ani maminchem. I accept, I believe in the Torah Shebiktav. Shebaltav ani maminchem. I don't go for the Torah Shebaltav. Gareini al menashe tlantreini Torah Shebiktav. So, convert me, but the understanding that you'll teach me Torah Shebiktav. The Gaaba, so Shammai yelled at him, Vaitzir ibn Aziz. He kicked him out of disgrace. So as we saw, this is Shammai, this is not Shammai. We discussed the other day, this is not Shammai with an angry personality. This is Shammai's sheep. That things have to be clear. What this man said, was highly inappropriate, and that had to be reflected in Shammai's response. There's no such thing as coming and telling Hashem what you're going to do from this. So, Baruch Nehila came to Hillel, Gaire, you are a good converter. How can you do that? Right? You can't convert a person unless he's really committed to keeping the whole Torah. So, Rashi says that Hillel saw that this person had this sincerity. Right now, he didn't have enough background to understand the truth of Torah Shebaltav. But he saw that the sincerity was there, and he saw that when this person would learn, would be taught, he would connect to it. And therefore, no one converted him on that basis. He started teaching him. So basically, what's this non-Jew saying? I want the Torah Shebiktav and approach it myself. And just basically what he told him is, you teach me how to read and then I'll be capable of approaching it by myself. Right? So in the Kama on my land, the first day he taught him Aleph Beis Gimel Daleth. Okay? The Malcha, the next day, obviously, he switched it around. But yesterday he said was Aleph Beis Gimel Daleth. Today he said was Tavshin Reish Kuf. Omalei, so he told him, that's not what you said yesterday. Omalei, so Hillel said, they're relying on me when it comes to knowing what the Aleph Beis are. In other words, you're relying on me when it comes to knowing how to read Persian Mitzvah, right? So you can rely on me also when it comes to Persian Mitzvah. In other words, there's a lot of profundity to the point that Hillel is saying. It sounds like a very simplistic title. But Hillel is really saying something very profound. Hillel is saying, there really is no such thing as approaching Pirushim itself without the tradition of Pirushim. If you're not going with the full oral tradition. And he showed it in a very simple way. There's oral tradition as to which letters are which. So you have to come to the master as an oral tradition just in order to learn the letters in order to be able to approach Teresh of itself. That sounds simplistic enough. The truth is that the Khazari develops this point a lot further. He says, yes, it sounds very nice superficially that look, you have the Teresh of Al-Teh. Sorry, you have the Teresh of itself. clear cut, know what you're dealing with. Parashat Alpez, there's so much commentary that's added on there. Again, did it really go back to Sinai? Did it not go back to Sinai? How do we know? And Kuzari says, basically says Hillel's point, and he says a lot for us. He says, let's know something. Open up a Sefer Torah. Open up a Sefer Torah. There's no Nikudas here. I just don't have choice. You start reading a Sefer Torah. There's so many words that can be read all kinds of different ways. Even this, even the where to stop the psukim can be read all kinds of different ways. And if we were just to come with the Torah as is and say, okay, we want to make sense out of this text, you have 10 people, there's no way they would come out with the same setup of punctuation, of where to stop, how to break up the psukim, etc., etc. So we have Chumash, we have prison Chumash, it's great. Where did that come from? Right? Where did the Nekuzim? The Sefer Torah is not Nekuzim. Where did that come from? I don't know how old printed Chumash and Nekuzim are. Whatever the case is, they do reflect the point that we're making. So the Torah, how do we know what the Nekuzim are? Again, the Torah deliberately is without it. And you know why it's without it? It's to bring home this point that you can't even begin to approach the Torah without a very sound oral tradition. The Nekudas, how you read the Torah, how you break up the Pesukim, was oral tradition. Right? And they put immense effort into memorizing. They were extremely pedantic about memorizing the precise meaning of every word, and of copying exactly, and of how you break up the Pesukim. On the contrary, this is a superficial example of the grandeur of the tradition of Torah Shabbat. The fact that centuries later, and Jews dispersed all around the globe, okay? And nevertheless, there is absolutely no dispute as to exactly how every word is supposed to be read. That reflects a very, very strong agenda. First of all, it very, very clearly reflects the fact that it all came from one source, okay? That's number one. But it also shows you the beauty of the Messiah, of how dedicated the Jewish people were, how much effort they put into preserving every crumb of Torah in its pristine form. Now, it's set up this way so that you should see clearly that any thought about approaching Torah Shabbat on your own is ludicrous. Okay? And this is really just meant as a reflection of the fact that, whether you like it or not, you are heavily, heavily relying on the transmitters of Parashat Balpeh. So you're going to come and tell them. So I have to admit that you guys are transmitting something that goes back to where the Torah originally came. You can't get around that. Right? You can't get around that. But, and these very same people are telling you, along with this tradition, you see how dedicated you were, you see how pedantic you were about ensuring that every last page is transmitted as is. We're telling you that along with all that, yes, comes a set of explanation, elucidation, commentary, etc. So what are you going to come and tell these people? No, that I think you're making up. I have no choice but to accept from you the crutches that I see I need in order to be able to approach the written title. Then I have no choice but to accept. But when these very same people, this very same party are coming and telling you, just as we have this, this is part and parcel of that, it comes from the same place, that you're not going to accept, that's already completely arbitrary. That's very arbitrary. Now the truth is it's more than that. The truth is that if you really start again, the concept of a written Torah without an oral Torah is very nice on paper. But when you actually sit down with the sacred Torah and put it to the test, it doesn't work. There's so many mitzvahs that just, there's no way to interpret them. Unless you go very arbitrary. We just don't think of it. We're so used to the meaning of these mitzvahs that, yeah, that's what it does in the Pasuk. But the Kuzari shows one example after the other, where you see that, no, the Torah was set up, and this is what Hillel was showing you. The Torah was set up such that it has to be translated. Sample a couple of minutes. A couple of minutes. Fill it. Fill it is a classic. It's right. Classic example. Oh, my self is better now. What else are my self is? Right. And what they're supposed to look like. Even the Karaites wore black square tefillin. What's the basis for that? Because I already showed that there's so many things where they, well, they don't have any other way of making tefillin, so, you know, what are they going to do? But this is always how it was worn. Oh, so once you happen to come onto this Lord how it was done, once you see that you cannot just take a sefer Torah out of a vacuum and start implementing it, then you have no choice but to accept the full package. Another example. This is a verse. On the eighth day, you should circumcise the appended piece of flesh. Is that how we would translate it? The appended piece of flesh.
Foreskin.
Allah's the foreskin. What's that?
With the actual flesh.
Arla.
Or the
Arla's side. His Arla. Arla's side.
Yeah.
What is that? Is it the earlobe? Maybe it's a little bit of the extra skin at the elbow? Who said that it's there? Who said that it's the foreskin of the male organ? What do you mean? That's how this is always done, huh? Okay, so again, you're coming on to a live tradition. That's exactly the point. They tell you cannot escape the live tradition. Otherwise, it's completely arbitrary. It makes sense that it would be the foreskin of the Makam Amilo. But someone can make an argument that maybe it really is the Milo. Right? Plenty of other instances also. Plenty of other mitzvahs also.
It doesn't have a literal definition. Is there a literal definition?
Arla means the extra skin. Something like that. That's how you translate it. Right? The excess. Covering. Other mitzvahs. Think of Arba mean. Arba mean. Okay, what did Arba mean? So how does the Torah describe that? The lulav is clear, right? Kapoy smart, okay. Arvin achal, that's clear. What about the other two? Anaf eats others. A braided branch. There's no dispute in Kali's laws exactly what that means. It means the merchant. And it means the hadas. If you're just going by the word, I'm sure I can identify all kinds of other things that can serve that. Even more vague is the answer. Three eats other. Right? How will you translate the word hada? Does it mean a beautiful a fruit? Does it mean a fruit? Bunch of interpretation that dwells on the tree from year to year. Whatever it is, here there's really room for broad interpretation. Somehow or the other, the Karaites used the same message that we did. They wrote on our tradition when they didn't have a choice. Right? But again, the Torah is given in a way that when you really sit down to apply yourself, it makes you understand you cannot get away from connecting to the live tradition that comes with it. So once you come and say, okay, I have to rely on these people, they are carrying where he came from originally, but for some reason or the other, they decided to make up a whole added element. His part is reliable, the part that I need, the part that I can't go without, that's reliable, but the other things that they say are not. Right? Self-contradictory. Okay. We move on. So that was non-Jew number one. That was the first gay restraint. Shum baisim enach liyasha. Then there was another, this year was another non-Jew. Shabbat neshama. Came to Shama. Mama Aloy, he told him, Gaireini al-menashe talabdeini kol ha-teru kula. Convert me. The understanding, you'll teach me the whole Torah. I don't have much time. I'm a busy guy. Teach me the whole Torah while I'm standing on one foot. So, Gospel, Ba'amas, Abinin, Shemiyada, in Shammai, we learned it was a contractor or a builder, whatever it is. He had a yardstick in his hand. Shoved him out with his yardstick. Okay? Mavet Nehila. Now, again, this was Shammai implementing his Shita. You come in, you want to get accepted into medical school. Okay, not just that, but you're going to neurosurgery. And you say, listen, I'm not fine. 8 years. Who has 8 years? Come on, give it to me in 15 minutes. Go ahead. You're making a travesty of the whole thing, right? It's offensive. It's not just ridiculous, it's offensive. Shammai says, that's not covered for the Torah. Chase them out with his yards. Right? And he came to Hillel. Guy that Hillel said, whole Torah at once, look, no problem. 15 seconds, plenty of time. It's the whole thing. Omar Leh, he said, here's the whole thing. Da'aloch Sani, l'chavroch le'chavim. Whatever you don't like, don't suit the others. Here you go. So he called out to the Kula. That's all there is. Enough. Pirushu. All the rest is just commentary. Zilgmar. Now go scroll in the comment. But that's the essence of the comment.
That makes sense for Dinadam Nechavero.
So this is the natural question. Rashi already addressed it. So what's Hillel saying? We all appreciate the lesson. Allah Sani Lahabak Laitavi, right? Don't see others that you don't want to do. But of course it seems harsher. So let's see Rashi. Rashi says, what you don't like, don't do to yourself, your friend. It's more literal, right? Say your fellow. But here we'll go with the literal meaning your friend. Okay? Who's your friend? Rashi says, do not forsake your friend and the friend of your fathers. Which friend are we talking about when we say don't do it to your friend that you wouldn't want to do it to you? We're referring to Hashem. Al Tavar Al Tavar. Do not transgress what he says. Shari Alecha Sami, because you don't like Shiava Alecha Al Tavarecha. If your fellow would transgress what you say. Okay, say that. Are you comfortable with that? Good?
I understand.
We understand. Let's say I come and tell you what. If you would expect 500 things in time, right? You would like me to do it, so therefore I can come and tell you 500 things that I'd like you to do. I'm going to tell you. I want you to clean my house, and I want you to do all kinds of things because you want me to do that for you. Reasonable? Not reasonable. Like, we haven't really gotten to the answer here. Rashi said, you don't want somebody doing things that you don't like, so therefore Hashem is coming to do this in a bear. Hey, you want me to do what you like, so you do what I like.
It sounds like it's saying, he's leading out on the macro, but it's like just saying reward and punishment.
What's that?
Reward and punishment. You're correct. With your human friends, you wouldn't expect that your friends are typing advance on you. But with Avarishwaraku runs the world and is giving you everything and is controlling everything that happens to you, he says, okay, this is what I'm expecting. This is the expectations in this relationship. This is what I want, and I don't know if there's necessarily a promise that there won't be any Yorish, or it won't be any negative things happening.
Well, we have to get out of it, because Hillel is coming entirely from the moral perspective. Okay. We don't want someone acting that way to you, don't act that way to Hashem. But you're really hitting on the point. Curtis Albubis develops this point further. Rashi says it in Rashi's Deras with a few cryptic words. Curtis Albubis develops it so beautifully. He says, but this is not sure you ahead. He says, if you had done for somebody else a fraction of what Hashem does for you, how would you expect them to relate to your idiosyncrasies? Okay? You would expect them to be head over heels. Right? So, now taking into account everything that Hashem does of you, if you're taking it in that perspective, the 610 expectations are not much. And here it is an issue of being decent. Before we're talking about being poor. Hashem has the right to expect that of you. Take into account everything that he's doing. Hashem says, listen, now, you don't have time for me. How much time every day do my mitzvahs take? Let's say they take 4 hours. Let's say they take 4 hours. Hashem says, you don't want to do my mitzvahs? So instead, I'm not going to bother taking care of your digestive system. Do it yourself. You'll be a lot busier. Hashem is taking an awful lot of time, right? You eat lunch. Half hour later, you're back at work. Your body's very busy. All kinds of things. There are hours that need to be tended to now, right? But you're not busy with that. Who's busy with it? Hashem. This is the point of Chazal's Amar mistakes. Be a mensch. Hashem has a right to expect these kinds of things. Very small expectation. Had you done so much for somebody else, you would expect of them, right? You give somebody a house. You give somebody a house and you tell him, Oh, look, I want you to put up in your hallway a plaque that says, thank you to
me.
Okay? So then you have one person who comes and says, look, such a plaque was $30. Maybe we can make a different arrangement. I'll write it on a piece of paper and tape it up on the wall. Right? Or does it really have to be the higher quality one, or can I do the lower quality one? Give you a house, right? And resentfully put it up on the wall. Look what he expects of you. We're not talking about being a tzaddik, we're talking about being a bitch. People don't think of it in these terms. This is not such a profound point that Hillel is making here, according to Rashi, the first of all. In our relationship with Hashem, before talking about Rumpheim, talk about menschlichkeit, talk about decency. Think about the things that Hashem gives you. Now Hashem is saying, I want you to do this. There's a whole preface to that. Because we have to learn to know all the things that Hashem does for us. That's an avoid in itself. But then, yes, it turns into an issue of don't relate disgustingly to Hashem. Because you don't want someone acting that way to you if it was the same sort of circumstances. Okay. So, this is interesting. The very sky here. So, we saw taking this story at face value holds profound enough of a lesson for us. Based on this understanding of Rashi and the Chavis HaVavos. This Rashi adds, by the way, Rashi adds the other chat. Inami, Rashi says, Chamel Chamamish. You're right, he didn't mean all the mitzvahs. He meant many of the mitzvahs. Then other Machamamish. But, regardless of Rashi's first child, regardless of the Chavis HaVavos, this holds such a punch in terms of the perspective of our Zimbabwe of Hashem. We're not talking about Elul Abba. We're talking about you want to consider yourself a basic, decent human being. Apply yourself to Hashem's mitzvahs. He gives a number of different shots into what this guy meant when he said, reach me the whole Torah on one foot. But all of them have a common theme. It's expressed in different ways. When he said on one foot, what he meant to say was, I'll send you a few of the viewers, just in order to show the common theme. It's all the same idea. Because the Torah has three, this is one. One way he puts it is, because the Torah really has three legs that it stands on. I think there are three areas of Torah existence. There's the Araiza, there's the Rabbana, and then there's what we call Ili Dechasidism, beyond the letter of the law. Beyond the letter of the law, we have to understand, is a fundamental area of Torah existence. It's like the kind of sense. A person who spends, okay, you know, actually, this is really part of the point of the Bibliya. But there are three areas of Torah existence. Okay? The Araisa, the Ramana, and the Finish Rasabi, beyond the letter of the law. Okay? This guy came along and said, I want you to teach me the Torah standing on one foot, meaning, I want to stand it only on one foot. How many pieces are ISIS? Not the Drabana, not the Mili, the Chasidusa. Okay? This is not the same as saying Persian, it's not Persian, it's not Persian. Those are all Persian, it's not ISIS. I'm going to keep all these are ISIS. Not the Drabana, it's not the Amulet of the Mili. Another one. What is he coming and saying? He's coming and saying, I want to. So I want to dance by all the way. I want to catch the open focus. I understand the great things that are destined for the Jewish people. I'd like to have that too. But I only want to invest the most basic effort in order to get it. So I'm telling you this, I'm not going to keep you on money, I'm not going to keep any beyond the letter of the law. But I want, others are saying this, I do want to have the benefits of the Jewish people. But I don't want to pay the full price. I want a discount. Okay? That's basically his time. Another way he puts it is, okay, he gets a few different shots of all along the same line. And he was trying to, the Ben Ish Chai, Ben Yoyada, he was trying to gain the benefits of Yiddishkeit, but trying to boil it down to a certain bare minimum that you arbitrarily define. Another shot he gives is, there are a lot of there are assays, right? There's the two legs you can set his stance on. Voice is saying, I say. So, I'll put the voice saying, not the I say. And I'll keep my nose clean, but I don't want to have to be doing things. that. But you don't want to talk to all these lines. Instead, I want to take it on one place. And Hillel's response is, so again, Shammai comes and tells him, take a hike. Which is really the true answer. Right? But Hillel comes and tells him, you want a relationship with Hashem? You want a relationship with Hashem? You take your relationship with a person, you declare in advance, So you tell a woman, you like her, okay? And you think it would be beneficial to marry her, you like her looks, and you like her cooking skills, and whatever it is, she also happens to come from a wealthy family, okay? And you tell her, look, I want to marry you, and let's figure out, what are the basic obligations for the husband? Because I'm really the husband type. And I can't be bothered to, really go all out. My heart lies in football. But, the basics are cool. I'll make sure to, punch my card in a basic way. Who's interested in going into such a relationship? Right? You want to go into such a relationship? If you're going into a relationship with someone who tells you in the first place, I'll be there 25% for you. I'm not really going to be there already. If you want to go into such a relationship, you definitely want to go into such a relationship. That's what you're offering Hashem. Right? You would not want to accept a relationship on these terms. Don't offer that relationship to Hashem. Okay. We move on. Shuv Meister ben Ofri Yechon. No, the incident with another action. That he was once passing behind the shul. The Shama called Saifa, Shaya Aiva, and heard a teacher, a Rebbe who was teaching his Talmidim, said, Melav Golem Ashayasu, these are the garments you should make, right? This is the Frank Godo. Chavshem, Levi, right? Described all the grand, magnificent garments of the Frank Godo. Amma, so he said, Halalu Levi, who are these four? Amma, right? The Kain Gadol, they thought this is the Kain Gadol. Sounds good. Amma, I say, not for you, that's right. So this man just said to himself, Eilech Vezgaya, I'll go and convert. The Shmuel Shem said, what are you Kain Gadol? We don't just have one term. I'm going to convert, I'm going to convert, guys. That good news, but one string attached is, just going to do one thing, you've got to make me the Kain Gadol. Okay? When it comes to the United States, he's willing to accept U.S. citizenship as long as he's sworn in as the next president. Okay. So, Malif Nei Shammai came to Shammai. We can already anticipate. Omalei told him, Gerin Yam Nashi Kitsimeni Kohen Gadol. I'm willing to convert, but on condition you make me Kohen Gadol. So, they took out that famous yardstick. What's that?
Was this going Adam Gadol that he thought he like? It seems to be the chutzpah that he was nobody. But if he's like Caesar, Caesar.
That's why he earned himself Shammai's yardstick. That's basically what Shammai was expressing by waving his yardstick. He didn't even say any words.
But I'm trying to even understand what the situation was that the guy even
apparently
do it.
I guess the Alderich HaShat will just have to say that we're talking about a very simple-minded fellow. There also might be a certain psychological element to this. This is something that's very interesting. You see, like, for example, also you see this in the Old Testament about how, from an non-Jew's perspective, he might feel like he's really complimenting the Jews. Most people want to get away from the Jews. Here's somebody coming and magnanimously saying, I'm willing to join you guys. I'm willing to join you guys. Isn't that a beautiful gesture on my part? And the historic slap in the face, which has been a shock to many a person who has approached in order to become a Ger, was that we're not interested. It's like every religion, every religion in the world, the major religions, certainly, a major agenda of theirs is membership, right? Evangelism. And then you have major religion, you think that it's the biggest thing you can do. The greatest thing they can hear is that you want to join them.
Who's interested? It's fine. You go back home. Right? Kuzari. The Kuzari says that the dialogue between the Chacham and the King is the Sefer Kuzari. After the Chacham explains at length the basis of the Torah, showing how national experience of Sinai, etc., etc., so the Kuzari, the King of Kuzari, comes back with what he thinks is a knockout punch. Because according to what you're saying, there's no reason I should be obligated by it. Because it's all based on the national experience, etc. The answer blows him away. The Chacham answers, that's right. No other obligations, no other nations ever. The other religions say, you're kidding. Fire and brimstone and sword, if you don't accept it, you're coming to pay the fine. No one is interested in you joining. So, you could have, this is where it was coming from. Look, you guys on the underdog, not willing to deign to join you folks. But, you gotta understand, me to leave my prestigious status as a non-Jew, willing to join, you, you know, at least make me a friend of them. Right? So, Palestine Hillel, thank you Hillel, Hillel, again, it's the whole step that Hillel takes. Hillel sees into the person, he sees that this person does have the potential, he just has to be worked with. A guy or him. All knowledge. So he said, all right, you want to become the next kind of God. Can we possibly, you understand the prestige of this position, can we possibly appoint someone as a king before he's learned all the protocol of being a king? Go study the subject well. Come back to me. Are you ready? And then we'll set a date for the coronation. Right. So hola Mikar.
Everything you mentioned earlier.
He went.
When you buy,
Once he came to the post of God, the foreigner who approaches will be put to death. Omale, he said. Red light went on. So because there Al Nema. Who's this post of talking about? Omale, he told him, Afilu al David Malach Yisrael. Even if David Malach Yisrael wants to approach, wants to become a kohen, Zara kohen is a far. No, so it's a ger called the kohen of the Hatzim. So this ger, at this point, he had enough background. He made the kohen of the kohen. Umay Yisrael, sheni kru banim la mokoi. If the Jewish people are considered kibyochal Hashem's biological children, it says Ava she ahavam kohen bini b'chayr Yisrael. And because of his great love for them, he called them my firstborn Yisrael. Still, see about them, it says about them, the foreigner who approaches will be put to death. Yerakal, someone who just came off the bus with his staff and his backpack in hand. Alachas kama v'kama. Simply. The Baruch Hu Shammai, he came to Shammai Omar. He said, "Who are you? Who is Kain Gadol? Can I possibly be Kain Gadol? I'll exceed my Torah. I'll ask for every human. Doesn't the Torah find who approaches when we put to death? But it's Hillel. He came to Hillel. Omar said, "I'm the son of God. Look how humble and patient you are. The blessing of Habrocha is on your head. May Habrocha settle on your head." That you brought me under the wings of the Shkut. The Yavim is Gavdu Shloshtam Lubavim. Sometime later, the three of them came together and they each heard each other's stories. They saw their common thread in all of their stories. Amro, they said, Shammai's strictness almost chased us out of this world. We would have lost our eternal opportunity. On the Tzibusai Shulhillah, the Hillel's patience and humility, Kervanu Tachat Kante Hashkina, brought us under the wings of the Shkina. This is very interesting to note, because like we said before, the Jewish people, we do not encourage comments. We don't encourage comments. But yet, we see from these stories, how when the right one does show up, quite how much we value. Because here, according to the rules, Shammai was following the rule book, right? Maybe the yardstick was an added measure. But we don't
making efforts to try to make it work. Right? If a person comes and pushes his way through the defenses, he's welcome here. We're not making efforts to make it work. But from here we see that when a person is great enough to be able to see this person is going to be a blessing to the Jewish people, that's a real courage. Otherwise, why would we know about the rules? Now, I don't think there's anybody today who could say that. The way we have to operate is we put up those defenses, and the one who makes it through the defenses is welcomed with a very warm embrace. But we cannot, chalila, afford to let go of those defenses. Right? The person has to prove himself. But we're seeing that essentially, if you have a person, that person has to be a hila, who can identify the gem, you will welcome him. Okay. We started the sugya. Okay, we'll save this for next time. You know what?